Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you along, and always good to talk to our buddy Casey Schutman from the Management Advantage. We'll talk about Management Advantage too. Casey, if people want to go, I mean, usually I default by going straight to your YouTube page, but talk about all the ways people can check out your videos.
Yeah, YouTube would be our main outlet, Facebook, Instagram. And we've got a Twitter account as well, and also our website at themanagementadvantage.com.
It's y'all the absolute. I say it all the time. I say it to Casey. I say it to Chuck. No doubt, my
Chuck Sykes.
Chuck Sykes.
Okay,
Who was on a couple weeks ago with our Big Turkey. We can go back and listen to that podcast. A whole in depth discussion of turkey populations and the shift in season in Alabama. And, director of wildlife for the state of Alabama, but also one of the people you see on the Management Advantage. But absolutely, my favorite outdoors program that has ever existed.
Well,
is
it teaches you something.
I've learned a lot.
Yes.
I've learned a lot from these men. Casey, and once again, in retrospect, so the score on the two deer that your neighbors, that got off you, that your neighbors killed, was what?
165 and 166, 167.
And one of them was an 8-point.
Yeah. Mainframe 8-point.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that I know you preach, and I know Chuck Sykes preaches, is in entering and exiting, and whether that be a lock-on and a bow setup or shooting house, blind in a field.
Exactly.
Y'all take that. So y'all are figuring that stuff out during the summertime, right? I mean, talk to us. Give us a crash course in that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that planning starts now. We're always trying to figure out how to hunt, especially up here and on a small parcel, how to get in and out without deer ever knowing you're there. And that, I mean, that's probably the biggest key with what I do up here.
Well, it should be that the biggest key for anybody hunting anywhere, really.
Yeah.
Getting in and out without disturbing anything.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, we talk about, like, bow setups and or lock-ons and ladders and all that in a second. But what I've watched Casey doing and Chuck doing over time, that y'all take places and you're designing them to be able to have that screening cover, and where a lot of us are just kind of stuck with, oh, well, here's the patch, here's the food plot, we got to get a stand on it, right? I mean, how do you talk to folks, regular folks would be, all right, they've got a lease, I mean, maybe they're lucky enough to own their own property, but they inherited food plots that are, 18-year-old pines that come up to the edge, they stop, and there's a food plot, and there's a road coming in one end and out the other.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do?
So, I mean, and a lot of people don't have the power or, the know-how to do what we're doing on a large scale. But for people that, like you're saying, inherit something like that, learn the specific track or the specific stand or location that you're hunting. When are the deer there? When are they usually showing up? When are they leaving? Factor in your weather conditions, your wind speed, your temperature during the time that you're wanting to hunt. A perfect example would be one of the stands on my grandpa's farm, and earlier we were talking about that deer I called Double Deuce. So the second time I had to let him walk off was in a stand that's on our north side. It's about 80 yards from our property line. It's a really hard stand to get into, especially in the morning, because you have to walk down our west side and through a big ag field that a lot of the times the deer are out there when you're trying to walk in. So what I have figured out over the last several years is there's certain wind conditions, there's certain temperature and weather conditions that you can get into that stand without deer knowing you're there. And there's other times where the weather may be perfectly lined up for a great, say it's mid-November and the rut's kicking and you're like, I got to be in that stand. But if you can't get to it without blowing all the deer out of the farm, you might as well not even go. So I had a hunt November 2nd. For that specific stand, you have to have a south-southeast wind. And if you're walking in the morning, I prefer it to be above 10 mile an hour before daylight.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, and I also prefer it to be below 32 degrees, because here around home, and that happens a lot, in November, we're in Illinois. But if it's below 32 degrees and that wind's kicking above 10 mile an hour, a lot of times those deer are bedded down right before daylight. So you're not going to be blowing them out of that food source that you have to walk through. And also, the last 100 to 150 yards of getting into that stand, you're walking through some extremely loud, crunchy leaves. And if you have to do that on a dead calm morning,
yeah,
every deer on the property would hear me walking in. So that morning, November 2nd, we had that wind speed, we had that wind direction, we had the right temperature. I slipped in right down the west line, slipped in nice and quiet, climbed up, hung my camera arm, got everything ready. I turn around, and it's just starting to break daylight, and I watch a deer stand up. Well, at 28 yards.
You're deadly at the stalking. You're deadly.
Guess
slipping.
Who it was? It was Double Deuce.
At 28, and he didn't. You got in the stand, and he didn't know you were there.
I got in the stand, and I hung everything up, got my camera arm, and just everything was just perfect. And that deer was laying down at 28 yards, and I never knew it. Never knew I was there.
Man, no, I duly impressed.
Yeah.
Duly impressed. You know, you mentioned something. I'm trying to take what you're talking. And if y'all don't realize, so Casey is bi-state. So that's what I like. He speaks Illinois and speaks Alabama. So he knows how to relate these things. Because I'm thinking about what you're saying. And one of these things I've taken away that, at least on one of our farms where we have big, big pasture, that when we have a frost, a good solid frost, the deer aren't going. They're just not going to be eaten in the pasture in the morning.
Yeah, when
they're
it's not, froze in Alabama, they don't come out.
Right, they're not going. Yeah. They're not going to be eating that. So the bucks aren't going to be chasing during the rut. That's one of the things. Now, full admission, I have used that before as an excuse not to get to the stand till after sunup. You know,
yeah,
maybe
yeah.
sleep for a few more minutes. But you're right. I mean, that is the way. Because the problem is, you go there when it's not and. I think we've all done this. You're walking into your – and I love to morning hunt. And there's a whole other side discussion. I know the Primos guys have talked about it and some others about not hunting in the morning. But I love to morning
Me
hunt.
Me too.
I love to morning hunt. But I do hate to walk into a stand and whew, whew, whew. I mean, just running deer everywhere. Yeah. I mean, it's you almost feel defeated before the hunt even starts.
Yes, sir.
But, you know, I've had that happen, Sean. And I run the deer off. And after about – 20-30 minutes, everything calms down and deer start moving again.
But deer or mature bucks? That's well, always my, you know.
I can't remember whether I've killed a mature deer after that, but I see deer, you know.
So, Casey, what about this? So, somebody is they're weekend warriors, though, right? So, and I mm-hmm. get what you're saying. Perfect scenario. It's frozen in the field. They're not feeding. The wind covers. The wind direction's right. Wind covers your noise going in. But what about the old weekend warrior? Man, he's got Saturday. He's got Sunday. You know, that's it. And then it's back to, you know, back to work on Monday. How do you deal with it? Is just more stands, more locations? What do you do?
The biggest thing is patience. I mean, especially in Alabama, you've got a season that runs from, what is it, late November to the February 10th
yep.
in most places.
Yep.
You know, if it's not perfect, it doesn't have to be perfect, but if it's wrong, you're better off not going to that spot. Figure out some other way. I mean, it may take years to figure out a certain property to where you have all the avenues to get in how you need to get in, you know, because we still want to go hunting. I'm not saying stay at home, but there's ways to figure out how to get in and out on every piece of property that I've ever hunted. Without deer knowing that you're there.
That's right.
And one of the things that, you know, I think about is that getting out part two for an afternoon hunt. And that mm-hmm. is, you know, and talking to Chuck over the years, I wish I didn't hunt by myself so much because he's always like, well, get your buddy on the phone to come drive the truck and get you and let the truck run mm-hmm. the deer out of the field. You know, so my problem is I'm by myself a whole bunch. And that's all, you know, I've sat there. You know, waiting. I have some good binoculars. I can still see that they're in the field going, man, maybe they'll leave. They don't end up having to get out of the box and it's deer running, you know, helter skelter. And I think that if you do that a couple times, you know, over a week or so, you can look at the deer numbers come down in the afternoons in those fields.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that, like when I shot that deer, I'm going to backtrack a little bit. That deer that I killed on October 22nd of this year, and I knew that Double Deuce had come out along with. There was like 20 other deer in the field. I stayed in the stand. I mean, I shot the deer probably 45 minutes to an hour before dark. And all these other deer came out, including the big deer. And I stayed in the stand probably an hour past dark. And we had a little bit of moonlight, and I could see, and I was just waiting for deer to get away as far as they could before I climbed out of that redneck blind. And I was able to get out. And the main reason was I knew that I had put a marginal shot on the deer.
Right. So it's good to let it wait anyway.
Stand, yeah. And all those deer started running through the woods. I was afraid they would domino effect back, and he would see everybody running off, and he would get up and run off as well.
Right.
I didn't want him to do that. I wanted him to go in there, bed down, and expire before I came back, because I was dead set on waiting until morning to come back. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want that deer to get up and lay down and get up and lay down and get up and lay down. And, I wanted as short of a track job as possible.
And it's, I know there's a bunch of different situations. You got me thinking, because I'm picturing y'all in the redneck blinds, and some where you can, if you have an open situation, maybe you have a open ground, old field scenario or whatever, you're going to put a patch in there. As much as we all like big patches, big food plots, I think I have a theory, big food plots, I think you have a better chance of seeing a big buck, but I can't defend that. With gun hunting.
Yes.
But I've seen y'all, you take, if you had a, say somebody had an open area that's 6 acres or whatever, it looks like maybe it's worth having a little bit smaller of a food plot and leaving some warm season grasses or whatever comes up there grown up, some kind of screening cover, and then y'all have had those redneck blinds back off of it where you come in, you don't even get near the food plot.
Exactly. I mean, that blind that I'm specifically talking about, I'll walk through a 60-foot strip of switchgrass, I walk out of the ag field into the switchgrass, got a little lane cut, and when I get to the ladder of that stand, I'm standing in 7 to 8 foot tall switchgrass. Yeah. And it's only then, and the platform's the line's only 5 foot off the ground. So when I'm climbing up the ladder, I'm coming out of the switchgrass, and the blind kind of blocks the view from the food plot, and you can open the door, and when you walk in, I mean, I hunted that blind probably 6 times this season, and probably 4 out of 6 times I had deer in the food plot when I got in, and they never knew I was there. They were standing at 40 yards.
How satisfying.
They didn't even know I was there.
That is the most sad, by the way, just side note, that's one of the most satisfying things in my hunting life. Is when I do that, when I get in, there's deer already there, and they don't even look up, and I'm in, and I just kind of showed up mid show, and they're already. I love that. I don't know why, but I love that. I love it.
Yep. It also gives you confirmation that your plan worked out.
True. And you're thinking more for morning setups and wood setups. What you said earlier is those conditions, wind velocity for cover, for covering your noise, and obviously directions. The first thing you got to figure out, but if you get the direction right, find that windy morning to get in there.
Exactly. And that, I mean, that's a, those are, that I'm talking about, specific stands. Not all stands are going to be like that, but when you have a super sensitive area like that one is, and it's really close to the bedding area, and it's just hard to get into, but when the weather's right, it's one of those stands that it's a killing stand. It's awesome. Chuck actually helped me hang it. That stand probably, I think it was 2010 when we hung that stand. And we've killed 3 really nice deer out of that stand on video.
And I appreciate, too, what Casey's dealing with these smaller woodlots and blocks there. It's even, it's so important for him because if you run them out of there, you run them on the neighbors or something like that, where for us in Alabama, hopefully we might have a bigger block of land, but still you don't want to run them across the line. You want them there. You want that buck to stand up at 28 yards first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
So
exactly.
A nice effect. All right. So but y'all are doing that kind of stuff, and it's what I love seeing in Management Advantage, the stuff that happens off season. Y'all are planning that stuff out, like you said, now. I mean, now is this time of year, I'm listening for turkeys, but I'm also, this is the best time to see trails and trail connections. And February is a favorite time for that.
Yes, sir.
Right now, up at our place, it's hog trails. It looks like deer trails, but it's dead gum hog trails everywhere. It's so muddy up there right now. There's trails everywhere, Sean. It's hard to find, hard to distinguish between the hog trails and the deer trails.
Well, then.
I'm glad we don't have those up here.
Yeah. You're very lucky.
And I don't dare say, I'm knocking on wood here. I'm still running on both of my properties more black bears than hogs.
Matter of time.
Don't curse me like that.
It is.
All right. Let's tell you what. I know we were going to get right into trapping, and I messed around. So let's do this. We'll run to the break, come back, and now I promise y'all we'll get into trapping talk, because this time of year a lot of people start thinking about trapping and where to even start with this. Maybe you haven't trapped in the past before. This man right here, Casey Schutman from the Management Advantage, has a lot of tips for us. You need to listen up when we come back right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And a reminder, too, we're going to be at the Mobile Boat Show. Guides Corner. So y'all get ready. The 6th, 7th, and 8th Guides Corner, all this kind of talk, we're going to be doing it in person at the Mobile Boat Show. Talk more about that coming up. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have y'all along this morning. And great to talk to our buddy Casey Schutman from the Management Advantage. Check out Management Advantage on YouTube. And you said you can link through from, what, all the different social media platforms?
Yes, sir. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and like I said, our website as well, managementadvantage.com.
All right. And y'all are going to go, if you've not done it, if you've not been there in the past, you talk about binge watching. You know, they always talk about that on the TV shows. I've been binge watching. I like to binge watch Management Advantage videos, and it's cool too, because you can search different parts of it. And my best guess, if you looked at the metrics, I don't know, Casey, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, that this time of year you probably get a lot of clicks on your trapping videos.
Actually, year round, that's probably our most requested, most asked about topic of anything that we do. And that's one reason why I really started doing more of that stuff. Of course, I was interested in trapping. It's one of those things that has a certain mystique to it. But when you go on YouTube, there's a million videos, and 90% of them are just not good. They're not done well, or they don't really teach you much. And I just wanted to kind of bolster that and teach guys that were like me that were trying to learn how to do it and get that information out there.
Yeah, I like it, because in Casey's videos, you'll see success. Like, they come up, here's a catch, and they have one coyote, two coyotes, a multiple coyote catch. And then you kind of, like, deconstruct it for us, how you set up there. And that's how I learn. You know, that's the way my brain works, kind of having somebody telling me in person and showing me what you do. And I guess as we look into this, we'll split in segments here. Let's start with coyotes, and then we can talk about catching coons and possums and all that. But with coyote sets here, this is, if people open up a book about it, they go, oh my gosh, there's so many different sets. I don't even know where to start. I'm overwhelmed. I mean, would you say, and I'm guessing here from watching your videos, if we pick one, it's worth starting and just kind of focusing on one, like a dirt hole set? Or what would you say would be the beginner's set for coyotes?
No, I would say, without a doubt, the dirt hole set. And there's many variations of it, but I try to tell everybody that's starting out to master a set and then go from there. So pick one and go with it and have success with it. Figure it out before you start experimenting with a lot of other things, because there's so much information out there. There's so many different videos, or there's always somebody trying to sell the magic bullet, mm-hmm. a certain set that's going to change your life and you're going to catch all the coyotes in the world. And it's really not rocket science. Figure out how to make a dirt hole set and catch coyotes. Me and my buddy, we were actually in South Texas last week. He was trying to experiment a bunch with stuff. And by the end of the week, he said, you know what happens when you start struggling with dirt holes? You make more dirt holes.
it's a volume game. I mean, the number of sets, but I know, and you can talk about the number, how many traps you could have running at one time, but for somebody on a regular hunting camp or own piece of property, I mean, if they're going to go online and buy their leg hole traps, I mean, what is the starter number? I mean, what would you say was how many traps somebody need to buy?
I mean, that all depends on how much time a person has.
True. It's time-consuming. It is time-consuming.
Yeah. Yes, it's very time-consuming, and you have to check your traps every day.
Yep.
Say you have all your traps out, and you have a really good night where all the coyotes run, and you catch three or four of them, and you've got to take care of that coyote, remake the set, and then you're talking, one day you might be there an extra 2 hours versus a day where you don't catch very much.
So you would say the number of traps somebody buys to start off with, use your amount of time realistically that you're going to be able to devote to this, to the number of traps you're going to run.
Yeah. And, I mean, to maybe answer your question a little better, you know, I started out with a dozen traps.
Okay.
Long time ago, just to see if I would, you know, be interested in it, and it was something that I would want to keep going with. And then the next year I had two more dozen, and then the next year I had four more dozen, and then before you know it I had 18 dozen and turned it into a full-fledged business and was killing coyotes everywhere.
Man.
So.
You think about
I can't. A lot of metal.
You're running that many traps in a day?
I can. Not every property that I do. You know, most of the properties that I'm trapping now, you know, it's ADC work. People are hiring me to come in and take care of a problem. And I've been doing them for, you know, most of my clients are hiring me twice a year now. I'll do it this time of year, and then I'll go back in midsummer, especially in Alabama right before the ponds are dropping.
Yeah.
But, you know, after years of trapping certain places or certain farms, you learn where you can catch them. And, you know, the amount of traps might go down, but the success will go up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm kind of pinpointing where exactly the best locations are at. You know, a lot of everybody always asks me, how many, you know, I've got 1,000 acres, how many traps should I be running? Well, every place is different and every population is different. You know, you might only have four locations per, you know, 500 acres. And then when I say location, every location is going to be at least double set, if not triple or quad set. And that's a pretty decent average, I would say, on a 500 acre track. And there's going to be 4 to 5 really good spots to catch coyotes, and that seems really low. But those coyotes are traveling a lot of the same routes. They're taking the easiest path. They're hunting just like a bird dog would hunt, and you can catch a lot of the same coyotes in the same spot this time of year.
Yeah.
You know, of course, it gets a little bit different in the summertime. You know, if you find sign in the summertime, if you set on that sign, you're going to catch that coyote because they're going to be pretty close. They kind of hone in on an area and set up a pretty tight territory. I'd actually probably rather trap in the summertime over the winter if it wasn't for the heat, just for the fact that you can catch coyotes in the summertime. I mean, they do not avoid a set unless you've educated them, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the catch ratio in the summertime is astounding. You hardly ever have one. You mess with a set without getting caught. They can't stand it.
So you're talking about putting, this is, say, 3 or 4 traps out in one spot or one area, or what's it? Can you catch 3 or 4 of them at one time?
Yeah, watch this man's videos.
Yeah. I mean, I had an old man tell me a long time ago, he said, if you find a spot that you think you can catch a coyote, if it's good enough for one trap, it's good enough for two. And if it's good enough for two, maybe it's good enough for 3 to 4.
And so you'll come, and there'll be 3 or 4 caught and trapped right there together.
Yeah, the most I've ever had in one spot is 5.
It's unreal.
I thought the coyote would see the other one trapped and would run and wouldn't, you know, come around that again.
You would think, but, you know, I've had trail cameras up on some sets and watch a coyote get caught. And if there's more with him, or, you know, he might yelp a little bit, or he might howl, and it's going to call more to him. And it's just part of the animalistic world, especially if you catch the dominant coyote in the area, but if you catch, like, the alpha male, every other coyote that comes in there, they're going to see he's caught, he's distressed, and they attack him.
Yep.
And it's kind of disturbing to watch, but they will try to kill that coyote that's in the trap.
Like Jake's jumping on a strutter. Like Jake's, exactly. You shoot a strutter and watch those Jakes start beating him down.
Yep, they kick a man while he's down.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
How about
that? If you've got another dirt hole in that area, you know, most of the time they're within 10 feet. And if they smell bait in a hole and coyote glandular on the back, they're going to be like, oh, so you stashed something over here. I'm going to steal it from you. And then, wham.
Oh, okay. I see what you're doing. Yeah, I see what you're saying now. Yeah.
Yep.
I wonder about that distance, because I have, on some of my sets, I've caught same coyote in, you know, front paw goes in on a dirt hole set, and I catch him, and then he is dancing around or whatever and steps in. You know, I've had it close enough. I've had one. I've come up, and he had a back foot and a front foot. in a trap. I don't think he was just, as he's moving around, stepped in the other one. What kind of distance? I mean, is there any rule, or is it just kind of letting each situation tell you?
There's really not a rule. I mean, I know people that'll put two traps in front of the same dirt hole if they got a coyote that they can't catch. But most of the time, it's, you know, maybe a road intersection. Say a road comes to a Y or a T or comes at a four-way intersection. I'll purposely set them on opposite sides of the intersection for wind directions. You know, because those traps are going to be there for 10 days, and how many times is your wind going to switch? If you keep those traps on one side of the road or one side of the intersection and the wind's wrong and that coyote comes down that road, he may not ever see or smell your set.
Yeah,
so I'll make sure that one's on each side to cover all your wind directions. And then, of course, you can only catch so many. You can only catch as many coyotes as traps you have out. So if it's a really good spot, I might set three or four or five. We were in Nebraska back in this late December, and we had some spots. We were setting a dozen traps at one spot just because there was so much sign.
Wow.
Man.
Yeah.
I want to talk a bit about it. You talk about the wind direction, so we'll talk about the smell associated with this. But I want to throw in, first of all, yeah, I've got one set on either side of people looking for a place to trap. And Casey can tell us the best places on to look, roads and all that. Casey, I got a cheater spot you would love. I'll take you some pictures. I got a bridge crossing a creek.
Yes, sir.
And it is a highway. They pinch down and they walk across this bridge, across this creek, and it's been good. It's been a good set.
Yeah.
So it's they're kind of a major funnel of them.
They love the path of least resistance.
Yes, and it's helped dumb Sean figure out this is a good place to catch coyotes.
Yeah.
Another thing I was wondering about, and we're going to get to catching coons and possums, but I stumbled upon this years ago by going to run my traps and not getting to my DPs, my coon traps, before the coyotes did, and showing up and there just being the arm of a raccoon in the DP. Or the possum or whatever, coyotes, or in this case also coyotes and cats, came up and had themselves an easy meal while that critter was trapped. So I said, maybe I ought to set some dirt holes around where I set my coon traps. And so the satisfaction of coming up there to the DPs with either arm left in a DP trap from a coon or a coon that, you know, was in that trap, and then in the dirt hole sets nearby. One time I walked up, I had an arm of a coon in one, and had a bobcat caught in one and a coyote caught in the other. And I said, cha-ching.
We've got so many coons that we have to set DPs around our dirt holes to keep the coons out of the dirt holes.
Almost like a protective measure.
Yeah, and then that attracts the coyote.
Just because of the habitat and the amount of food that they have. And we call DPs linebackers up here. That's our defense.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so I want to get to you. We've been talking about dirt hole sets. You mentioned scent, so let's give like the crash course. Now people are gonna go watch the videos on YouTube at Management Advantage. But talk about this. You mentioned scent. You mentioned trap placement. You said dirt hole. Walk us through what that means. Like walk us to step one, two, three, four.
So basically, when you make a dirt hole set, you are mimicking where a coyote has dug a hole and buried a chunk of whatever he was carrying around. And they do that in the real world. They're like a dog. They'll bury a bone. So you're trying to mimic that and make it look fairly natural. I use a DeWalt drill with a 2-inch dirt hole auger to make my hole. And I'll drill it at a, 45 degree angle, with some type of backing. Don't get overly aggressive with your backing. A lot of guys will try to carry a big giant log or a rock out there, but if I'm in a road intersection, I'm just going to look for a tuft of grass, and it may only be a 2-inch tuft of grass, but I'll drill that hole at the front side of it at a 45 degree angle, and the backing is going to keep him from coming on the back side of the trap, but that angle of that hole is going to line him up to come in the front of it where the trap's actually at. Because he wants to be able to see down in that hole as well as smell it. And this is really hard to explain over a phone conversation, but basically you're burying your trap in front of that dirt hole set or in front of that dirt hole. I don't really measure where my pan is going to be. A lot of guys will say 9 to 11 inches back and 2 inches offset.
Right. I've heard that a bunch of times, that 9 to 11 in offset,
And sometimes it's closer, sometimes it's farther away. I usually let the ground tell me how that where that trap needs to be just to make it a natural step for that coyote. But most of the time when they come up to a dirt hole set, they're going to, you know, they're going to smell something. They're probably going to circle it once or twice. But they're going to end up coming down on that the side of that hole where you have your angle drilled. And they're going to stick their nose in that hole, and their paw is going to land on either side of their jaw.
That's the offset. That's why you say offset.
Yes, and that's, yeah, you don't want to go straight. So basically the pan is going to be dead in line with the edge of that 2-inch dirt hole or 3-inch dirt hole or whatever. And, you know, I've never really measured it, but 90% of the time, I've kind of caught myself the last year or two checking myself or just seeing what it is. And I can actually, like, spread my hand out, and from the tip of my middle finger to the tip of my thumb, from the edge of the dirt hole to the center of the pan, it's usually dead on.
Okay.
And that's probably around 9 inches. But that's just a natural spot for that coyote to set his foot when his nose goes in the dirt hole. Now, not every time are you catching them by the front foot. Sometimes you'll catch them by the back. Maybe they weren't interested in, you know, digging in the hole and stealing from his buddy. Maybe he just wanted to mark it as his own, and they'll go to pee on it or poop on it, and you'll catch them by the back foot as well. I actually had several comments on a picture I posted there a week or two ago. Some, like, three or four guys were like, oh, it's a back foot catch. And I'm like, yeah. A catch is a catch, bud.
Yeah,
yeah, it don't matter.
Not scoring it.
If he had a fifth foot, I'd try to catch him. You know, I don't pull him. You know, I want to catch a coyote however I can catch him, and as long as he's in the trap, that's where he needs to be.
Okay, and for setting, and Casey's right, for describing dirt hole set and how to bed it and all that stuff, best to watch these videos. But just as another part of this, you talked about you're drilling that hole at a 45 degree. And believe me, I'll post up some videos. You can see I just copy him. Number one, my knees are bad, so I wear the knee pads. And I got the same auger now. After digging with a garden trowel
scoop
for years, I got smart and got a drill rig as well. But you're putting something in that hole to draw that coyote there to think he's going to steal something. What are you putting in that hole?
So I'm using a bait that I make now. I call it Anvil, and it's a bobcat based meat, and then there's several glands in it, and I'll tell you what's in it. It's got beaver glands, muskrat glands, it's got skunk fat. It's got a little bit of fish oil. It's got
so it's not just the scent of the meat. It's gland scent as well in that.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, what you're trying to mimic is, or not mimic, that bobcat meat's going to be tainted just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is I grind it all up and I put it in a. I've got an old freezer that I put a little lamp in there, and I'll keep it about 80 degrees for 3 or 4 days to let it start to rot. It smells real nice. And then you add all your glands to it, grind it again, and then you put a preservative in it to stop it from rotting. But it'll stay, that smell will stay with it. We do that for colder weather. That's going to be a colder weather type bait because you need something that's going to carry in cold weather, especially up here in the Midwest or wherever up here where it gets really cold. You need something that's going to have a scent that's going to carry for a while. This time of year, I'll still use that bait sometimes if I see the weather's going to be colder, but I'm making another bait now that's a fresh type bait. If you're using a tainted bait, when it gets warmer out, they'll tend to roll on it instead of want to eat it, and that's the key is you got to make that coyote want to eat whatever you have down in that hole.
Does using this bait with the glands, what, because usually I'll put the meat paste in and then I come up to the top of the dirt hole and I put some kind of scent, you know what I'm saying? It depends on what it is. I got different scents that I put up there as a marking scent, like a fox or something like that. Do you still have to do that, or with this, do you not have to do that?
No, you still do, because the glands that I'm using in that bait they're not a territorial or they're not a coyote scent. It's a gland from an animal that a coyote would normally want to eat.
All right.
And the reason we do that is And I had an old dog trainer explain it to me the best. And he explained to me how a dog smells. You know, so say you and your dog are sitting at a restaurant and you order a cheeseburger. You set the cheeseburger down in front of you and you smell a cheeseburger. What the dog smells is bread, meat, tomato, lettuce, mayo, ketchup, mustard, pickles. And he's smelling all that in a process. And he's going through all that while you're sitting there going, there's a cheeseburger.
Gotcha.
So with all that scent that's in the dirt hole, and you're adding layers to it. And the more layers you have in it, the longer that coyote's going to stay there and process what's in that hole.
Very good. We're going to come right back. More with Casey Shootman from the Management Advantage, talking some trapping and some advanced trapping. You want to get all that information, Management Advantage on YouTube. And then we're going to get into some more of setting these and some of the tricks he uses to make it real believable when you set the dirt hole and then come back. How do you camo this? Coyotes are smart, but Casey Shootman's smarter. So we'll get more from him when we come back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Continue our conversation with Casey Shootman, Management Advantage. And talking trapping, although we have to get him back too, because more trapping to talk about, more of his deer season to talk about. Plus, we can get in the thunder chickens for that discussion too.
How you trap them?
I've tried trapping with some TSS. Are you on the TSS wagon?
I am. Yeah,
that's just magic. It's magic.
I've been shooting it for 4 or 5 years now. Started rolling my own a long time ago.
Yeah.
Well, see, I know for a long time people like you who could reload were shooting it. Then it was just the last couple of years there was reliable supplies for goofballs like me that got to go buy it. Last year was the first year. 2 years I started shooting my first, and then I hunted with it last year. And it was – so I got a 410 – the biggest gun I hunt with now is a 20-gauge. I got a youth 20-gauge because I buy them for my children, Casey. I don't buy them for me. It's for my children.
Yeah, for sure.
I got this youth pump 20 that is just a – stone cold killer, and it weighs about 4.5 pounds. I mean, I don't even know it's on my back. It's a beautiful thing. That's a whole nother show we'll talk about. All right, talking trapping and talking coyote trapping, and a lot of this people got to see it. But the fundamentals here are you got to have traps. You said pretty much decide the number of traps you get to get into this by the just be realistic about how many you can run. Right? I mean, just be realistic with yourself.
Exactly.
Then next thing we got to
probably start out with a dozen.
Right. And then, do we have time to do this? I posted some pictures up on my Instagram as I was putting a new load of logwood dye on my traps. I do that, but I go look. I get the traps out of the box. I let them get a little rust on them. I logwood dye them. I haven't gotten into waxing yet. I got the wax. I got to do that. But then I watch this man. The tweaks you do to traps, I don't even know where you're starting on that. You're scaring me, Casey.
I mean, ideally, you buy a trap that doesn't need any tweaking out of the box.
Right. That's what I thought. That's what I'm paying for, right? Why am I paying for that? Shouldn't they be good to go?
Well, I mean, and most of them are. But, you know, when I'm tweaking on something, it's mainly for personal preference or it gets into a system that I have. And, you know, as many traps as you're running and setting in a day, you kind of want everything to be the same.
Right.
You know, we spend hours getting things ready days before we go anywhere to make sure that trap, whenever I grab it to put it in the ground, I don't have to do anything to it.
Right.
You know, one of the major keys that to being successful is being efficient and not spending a lot of time in a set. You know, if you're pulling into a property and a landowner's paying you, you got to go. Daylight to dark, and you don't even have time to stop and eat lunch. You run. And just trying to be efficient is you know, it's taken several years to figure it out, but it works. Works really well.
You know, and I guess the thing to point out right now, too, is, and I'm interested in trapping this time of year because there's a lot of, I want the fur, right? I'm interested in the coyote fur, and their coats are real good right now. But if we're talking about managing for wildlife on our property, you just said it. It's, your management trapping is happening later in the year.
Yeah, I mean, I'll start any, you know, right now, anytime, and it depends on where I'm at as well. You know, if I'm in Illinois, you know, we have a closed trapping season now, so we can't trap coyotes. But, you know, doing it in the wintertime up here is key because you're taking the stress off of the deer you know, when they're stressed the most in the harsh winter months. Down there, right now is the perfect time to start, especially if you're a turkey or a quail hunter. You know, you need to be taking out as many nest predators as you can right ahead of the nesting season that's about to happen. You know, we'll also kill coyotes as well because we're there. They're traveling quite a bit as well. So we try to take everything out that we can this time of year. And then, like I said, we go back in the summertime, mainly for our deer management, where we're going in and killing as many coyotes as we can and trying to create that void while those fawns are dropping.
Right, and you're trying to do the same thing. So right then you're trying to affect the fawn success, let them get up big enough where they can get away from the coyotes. And then right now you mentioned nest predators, and we got just a couple minutes. I want to get into that. We keep talking about DPs and what I'm running right now. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get ahead of those things that eat quail. I mean, eat turkey eggs and quail eggs, but turkey eggs too.
Exactly, and the best thing about coon trapping or your nest predator trapping is anybody can be a trapper overnight.
Yeah.
You know, you order some DPs and have a decent anchor. And, you know, with those, you know, we were talking about how many traps you need. With coyote traps, maybe start out with a dozen, but buy as many DPs as you can afford, because those are the ones that they're so easy to set. They're so easy to manage. You can leave them, you know, it's not a hidden trap. It's an exposed trap. You want the coon or the possum to see it. So if you're only a weekend trapper and you don't have time to pull them all or check them during the week, all you got to do is fire the trigger, and it's pre-baited during the whole week while you're gone, and the coon's going to be used to it being there. And when the weekend, when you show up, throw bait in it, set it, and you'll have success the first night.
Yeah, it's it makes you feel like it does. That's how I started. It made me feel like I knew what I was doing. And y'all, DP, we're saying DP, dog-proof. They're a different kind of trap, like Casey's talking about. They're cylindrical. They're above ground. And, you know, I'm baiting mine just because I have it, cat food and marshmallows. What do you run in your DPs?
I mainly run cat food. If it's cold out, I'll fry up some bacon and pour the bacon grease on it.
Ooh, that'd catch me.
And listen,
who doesn't like to eat bacon?
That's right.
Yeah. I'm not a trapper. Don't know really a whole lot about it. What do these traps cost?
I don't even know.
I think I can get, you know, I shop it around. And if you go to a place that doesn't carry a bunch of them, they can be very expensive. But I think if you go and online too, you can get about $10, because I think you can get a dozen for $120 after shipping or something like that.
That's a dog-proof coon trap?
Yeah, and you'll see.
Your best one, your best value is going to be Duke traps. They make a really good one.
That's right. Duke.
Yeah,
okay.
Duke. And you buy them by the half dozen or by the dozen. Buy them singles, but I don't recommend it. Buy them by the dozen and buy three or four dozen.
Yeah, and people need to remember, too, when they're getting into this, y'all going to buy traps, but then go over to the other part of the website, or if you're going to a local retail shop that's got them, you got to get the anchoring system. I think that's a lot of people go buy a trap and then not understand what happens at the end of that chain. There's a swivel, and then what happens?
Right.
Yep. DPs, if I'm running on solid ground, you know, my best anchor system that I have is just a piece of rebar that's probably 20 inches long, and I welded a 5/8 nut on top of it. And what I do is I just run it through the bottom swivel on that trap, pound it into the ground until it's level, and that'll hold every coon that I've never had a coon pull that up. Now, I won't take it in the bottom of a creek bed,
right,
put it in sand, but it works really well. And you can throw them in a box. They don't get tangled up. And then I'll actually keep all my DPs on a big D-ring. It's a class deal, like what they use for climbing.
Yeah, sure. Carabiner.
About as big as your hand, and you run that swivel over it, and I'll put a dozen on each one of them. That way I know I have a dozen. If I'm going to trap and I got to run somewhere, I'll throw a dozen of my anchors in with a dozen of those traps, and I know I have what I need to get done. It's just a really easy way to stay organized with those.
All right, listen, we're going to have to pick this. I hate every time we talk to Casey, we have to pick this conversation up going forward. But remind folks, once again, Online Management Advantage for YouTube, and then where else?
Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and also our website.
Y'all go check out his deer season. Yeah, you got to go check out the deer season through managementadvantage.com or then some trapping.
Yep.
And then some more habitat management. I mean, there's so much for y'all to see. Casey, as always, man, thank you.
Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. By the way, too, I'll try to get the video. I shot one. My daughter videoed me setting DPs the other day out at the farm. So we'll get that up on the Facebook page, facebook.com, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. I have a purple T-shirt on when I'm doing it, too. It's key. That's key. Prep Sports Report next.